Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson, and I am struggling to keep a straight face or my composure because sitting across from me is something that resembles Tom Deason but is changed somewhat in form. He is wearing a yukata or a version of a Japanese dressing gown. He's growing a moustache. He's sipping a Japanese craft beer. And he's sitting underneath some kind of beautifully pruned Japanese shrub. Tom, what have you done? What have you done with the real Deason?
Just unwinding after another big day, trying to fit in. Look, it was in my room. I thought I might as well try it. And, you know, you said you were here and I just rushed down to do the podcast, obviously committed to the cause.
So you thought you might as well put on the dressing gown, walk outside of your room into public spaces within your hotel and fulfill a professional obligation with your colleague.
Look, if you don't find this funny, then you won't find anything funny because it's hilarious. And just doing my best to try and entertain you, G. We've got another, how many weeks left on tour?
We have too many weeks left on tour if you're going to be getting around in this kind of stuff.
Anyway, if you're not a fan, that's fine. I can go change it. But we've got a bit of rugby to talk about first.
And it's been a really long day of rugby.
Yeah.
So you can see why my threshold for antics, like room wear, is kind of low. Anyway.
Well, considering this time yesterday, actually, almost to the minute, we found out that Reece Hodge had been pinned for 3 weeks. So I'm actually quite happy to be sitting here sharing a beverage as opposed to staking out as we were last night on Wednesday.
That's true. This is preferable, even you in a dressing gown. And a moustache is preferable to a concrete step underneath a Japanese high-rise.
It's
only been, just, though.
Look, there wasn't a lot of news in the 24 hours.
You just really want to talk about the footy and get away from your dubious outfit choices,
don't
you?
This is not a video podcast, thank goodness.
But I have recorded some video and posted it on Facebook and Instagram, so you can connect with us there and check out Tom's get up and hurl the correct commentary his way.
I reckon it works.
You would, mate, you would. So Hodgie.
Yeah, Reece. There wasn't a lot of news for a while there. The Wallabies haven't, as you've written for tomorrow's paper, that they haven't made a decision as to whether they're going to appeal it. In the Fair Dinkum department, you would think they're probably not going to. However, World Rugby released the full findings and a full statement this afternoon at Japan time into the case and sort of the nitty-gritty of what actually happened. What was the main talking points out of that, Jen?
Not quite the full report. There was a little bit redacted. There was a little bit of private medical history of Pathelli Yato that was redacted, and my guess detailing his history, you know, with concussion, because one of the big takeaways from the report is the medical doctor's prognosis and follow-up appointments with Yato, and even sort of 4 days after the game, Yato had not been able to even commence the return to play protocols that a player has to observe when they go back to rugby after a concussion incident. So I think he'd gotten on an exercise bike and started feeling dizzy. So he's still definitely in doubt for Fiji's next game, and he is undoubtedly one of their most, if not their most, influential player. And there were some pretty powerful quotes about him blacking out. He hadn't expect the contact to be so high, Reece Hodge's contact to be so high, and he blacked out and then woke up on his back.
That quote alone is not alarming. Like, obviously, that's what happens when you are knocked out. But in a headline on World Rugby, see that beamed around, that's concerning for them, isn't it? You know,
it's concerning for them. But I do get the sense, and I'm not trying to infer that there's anything nefarious about anyone's intentions or motivations. But I do get the impression that that was included to emphasise the point that we're dealing with serious issues here. So while World Rugby I think it actually highlights what's at stake and perhaps the importance of this dangerous tackle framework. And I still, you know, watching all of the commentary today and all of the reaction that continued in Australia, I still think that our comparisons with rugby league and even AFL sort of don't do this issue justice, because there is no doubt that rugby is trying to stamp out any contact to the head or neck, any contact, whether it's accidental or not. And I think they are trying to change behaviour using punitive measures like really extreme red card scenarios and a 3-week ban for what the tribunal did acknowledge was not a deliberate act of foul play, rather a reckless one.
And by the book, any contact with the head, as you say, intentional or not, that's 6 weeks. At a World Cup, 6 games, let's talk about World Cups, not necessarily weeks, obviously there's specifics there, but 6 games, that is a campaign done for most teams, unless you do it in the first game and you make a final, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, Reece Hodge had circumstances, he was able to talk that down, but there was some interesting stuff from Reece in there as well, in the evidence he gave too.
What specifically, Tommy?
The fact that he talked about that he may not have been totally aware of the new, not protocols, but the new framework that's been implemented, whether or not that is smoke and mirrors. And, you know, Reece talked about, I only tackle from sort of the waist down and I wasn't even across that. So whether or not he did know or not, is that a broader player issue? Maybe players aren't being trained or know about it. And, you know, World Rugby in that statement today did say
The panel found that a concern and would return to it later, and in the report it was never returned to. I don't know if the discussion did return to that, but that's correct. So Hodge was questioned apparently in quite some detail about the dangerous tackle framework, the high tackle shoulder charge framework, and he said he was aware of it because the Australian rugby players have been shown the framework that's now 2 years old. But I think his point was that he isn't aware of it in the greatest detail because fundamentally he is not trying to tackle around the head or neck. He tries to use a correct technique, and that is what they practice. So that's definitely a part of the report that I pulled out, for one. A number of people have pulled out. But again, I don't know that it actually is as significant as it looks in its quite selective placement in the report. Australian Rugby Australia and all of the provinces certainly teach correct tackle technique and have kept players abreast of, you know, trials like the nipple law and these new frameworks that come in. So what I did think was interesting and was that everything Australia went in there with, including that it wasn't a red card act, that it was only a yellow card act maximum, and that that the siding commissioner was wrong to disregard the takes of the assistant refs, the TMO, and the ref during the game, the panel just dismissed pretty much out of hand. I mean, in a four-hour hearing, they obviously went into a fair bit of detail and allowed Australia to kind of state their case, but gave it short shrift in the end and just said, incorrect, basically said that the TMO and the assistant refs did not have all of the angles available and noted that the assistant refs could not have possibly seen the contact with the head of Reece Hodge's head, shoulder, with Patheli Yato's jaw, and just threw it all out basically and said, sorry, this is absolutely a red card offence. And not even a red card offence with the low entry point. It was a red card offence because they deemed there was a high level of danger because Hodge's shoulder was going up, that it was a mid-entry. So 6 weeks, and only reduce it to 3 because of his exemplary behaviour in the tribunal and his disciplinary record. So, I mean, there's nothing very equivocal about. There's nothing very equivocal about that. It's pretty cut and dried. And I just wonder why Australia are waiting. I wonder if they're waiting to see what public opinion does, whether any pressure mounts before they make the call,
maybe.
Or whether they're taking further advice.
Well, I mean, there's a huge disparity between not guilty and guilty. Reece obviously was found guilty. That's a six-week entry point, reduced to three because of his character. Yet, if he strikes him sort of 30 centimetres lower, that's 0 weeks. So, to your bit part, rugby supporter sees that and goes, they just might not, grasp that. And the other interesting thing, too, is that younger rugby fans, and there's plenty of them, obviously the game is growing in a number of parts of the world, will see this and just get used to it. World rugby's put the foot down, they're happy for that to happen. Yet, the older generation, the guys who remember the head stomping of days gone by, and, not that that's a proud part of rugby, but it was, perhaps a little bit tougher in that regard, and some things didn't get policed like they do today for obvious reasons, might not be able to get their head around, the new modern rugby, sort of framework that World Rugby is putting forward. And they're disillusioned, some of them, obviously, just judging on social media and talking to a few people today, they're a little bit flummoxed as to how this has all played out, but that's just part and parcel, and it's the world we live in, right?
Yes, and I feel for the Australian administrators of rugby because it's high stakes. There's two other codes that people can turn onto if they do, as they threaten, turn off rugby, and that's tough. I don't think you can argue the science or the rationale, and I think while Australia argued unsuccessfully that this particular instance was not a deliberate act and just a footy collision, and I don't think many people would argue with that. I don't think World Rugby care. I think World Rugby just wants to get rid of head and neck contact, and whether it's accidental or not is not the issue. And I think Reece Hodge is the example in this case. Not that they're wanting to make an example, but this is the issue. He's given them the opportunity to put their foot down about this. And there's just one little section I'll read out from the report that really sums up how they view the incident.
Yep.
The panel decided that there was recklessness in the actions of the player in making this dangerous high tackle. First, his body position was high before contact and remained high at contact. In the panel's view, he was never low enough, even to achieve the kind of right shoulder low tackle he first intended. That was Hodge's testimony, that's the tackle he was trying to do before he realised he didn't have enough time, and then switched to a soak tackle to try and sort of tip up Yato and stop him that way.
Mm.
It goes on. Secondly, there was no attempt made by him to modify his height in order to avoid the potential for contact with his opponent's head. Thirdly, instead he turned his right shoulder inwards and slightly upwards, putting the shoulder in a line where it would make direct contact with Fiji 7's jaw, which it did. The tackle thus being foul play and unlawful in the panel's view did cause head contact. They also note that Reece Hodge admits it caused head contact. Funny, it looks damning in print like that. But as you'd contend, it was a split second.
Oh, I make split second decisions all the time in my life. I can,
like the dressing gown.
Yeah, that was a number of minutes putting this thing on. But look, the point being that this has happened in a second. Reece has had to front up for a 4-hour hearing. And I have no doubt that he knows that the contact was made with the head. But look, you do feel sorry for a bloke who is one of the nicest guys in that team, who won't be playing for 3 matches, go to a quarter final, and may not even get his spot back. Like, wouldn't that just be a story.
Yeah.
You'd feel for a guy like that. So he'll be 100%. Doing 3 weeks of running drinks and training hard and lifting tin and whatever you do.
It
to
was
keep...
really nice to see him on Instagram kind of taking it in his stride and keeping his chin up. I do think some of the stuff about, that he didn't know about the high tackle framework when he plainly did and wasn't arguing that he had no idea about it. His point was that he was trying to tackle correctly. That's what he goes out to do. I think that stuff, and the way this is playing out, might actually get to him, but at the moment he seems like his spirits are high, which is really good. Hang in there, Hodgie.
Yeah, he won't be there tomorrow on Thursday when the Wallabies name their team to face Wales on Sunday.
What are they going to do there?
Yeah, look, my gut feeling is that they will bring Dane Halepetti onto the wing and keep an unchanged back line. You know, do you tweak Nick White, Christian Leilifano, who, you know, did not have their best game, but pick and stick. There's enough to gain from that Fiji game, looking sort of having a few more days to just digest that and watch it again. So I'm happy for them to pick the same team. I think they will. The forwards, I would be staggered if they don't pick Pocock and Hooper again in the same back row, despite them having quieter games at the breakdown. Wales will also name their team. Have a piece tomorrow in the paper on Friday. Some quotes from Justin Tipperick, the number 7. He was obviously talking about Michael Hooper and David Pocock and why they're very different players. But the story's embargoed, so I actually can't talk about those quotes. One of the funny things of being a journalist, that you do an interview and it's all embargoed. You know, the UK guys would have my guts for garters if I let those quotes out. But he said some really interesting things about the game last year in Cardiff when Wales broke a 13-game winning streak. What else can I say?
I think it'll go down like a lead balloon in the Australian dressing room, and could even be one of those clips they cut out and put on the wall to justify the Aussies up a little bit.
The score was 9-6. It was one of the most boring games of rugby I've been to. The week before that, when they played Scotland at Principality, I was also there just as a... I was filing, but just, you know, observing that before the Australian game, and that was boring as well. So, look... Yeah, have a read. It's interesting. Amunaki Mafi, too, is back for Japan. Mm. Former Melbourne Rebels bad boy. I think we could probably call him that.
Yeah, alleged, I reckon we could.
Alleged bad boy, whatever you want to call it. yeah, look, you wrote the piece with Lepeti Tamani when he got allegedly... Well, he said, you know, I thought I was going to die. It was his quote. It was a crazy story.
He said he was on the ground having the living daylights kicked and punched out of him, and he thought he was going to die. He also had to jump out of a moving car that was allegedly being driven by Murphy and Murphy's brother in Dunedin, in the sort of the boondocks of Dunedin.
After a game that they just played together.
After their final game together as teammates, and he had to hide in a shrub. This is Lepeti Tamani, one of the scariest looking Tongan Australian rugby players I've ever seen. Huge, thick, in build, not in mental capacity, and he had to cower behind a shrub until his pulse slowed a little bit, and he had the wherewithal to make it to a hotel, flag a cab, and make it to a hotel. He was fearing for his life. Anyway, that court case is still ongoing, and I think the Japan Rugby Union, Tony Brown and Jamie Joseph, have been successful in kind of seeking adjournments and delaying it so they could play Amunaki Mafi, who is one of their best players, if not their best. So yep, it'll be interesting. I always watch Japan with interest because of Mafi.
Do you think a few people here will be watching that game too?
I think so.
Yeah, just a few. Like that guy at the ramen place throughout the other night, who was thoroughly enjoying the Japan hit out in their opener.
That's true. It's been really nice. It's a big enough city, Tokyo, that you can sort of be walking along and see absolutely no visible signs of the Rugby World Cup, but then you'll turn a corner, walk into a tiny little bar, there's a screen on, and there's a Japanese bloke tucking into his ramen or his sashimi, going mental at the TV. So it's really passionate small pockets of fans here.
Speaking of sashimi, we better get some, maybe a fill up here. Thanks for listening, rugby readers, fans, punters. Look, we'll be back on Friday evening. Get confused, given that the game is on a Sunday.
Sunday game really, really perturbs the very institutionalised journalists who are used to Saturday games.
Analysing the Wallabies team, Michael Checker no doubt will have something to say. Wales will have a team. Another podcast. Let's do it.
Let's do it, Tommy. Go and put some real clothes on.
Sayonara.